Blog Talk Radio.
All right. That's the theme song. Let me turn down this other whatever thing is playing. And welcome to the Kay Thompson Live Show. It's that time again on a Wednesday evening. We're going to do an abbreviated, a little shorter version tonight. We're going to be on for just about 45 minutes. Be talking for the next 44 minutes and change. And Mom is feeling a little bit under the weather this evening. I hope you guys are staying out of the weather out there in the streets. My name is Citizen Payne. Like I said, this is the Blog Talk Radio Network, 8 to 9 p.m., or really 8:15 to 9. I'm Citizen Payne, and let me get in one of our other co-hosts, Mr. Byron Saunders. Brother Byron, how are you this evening?
Well, I'm staying dry and warm, and I'm sorry you're feeling a little under the weather there, Eric. You know, I just got back from
Well, that's my mom I'm talking about.
Oh, your mom is talking about, well, yes, I'm glad that you're okay, but like you, I just came back from the swamp down in D.C. last night and escaped the snowstorm there to only bring it back with me. What do you say, you know?
I mean, that was, it seems to be traveling a little bit, but they say it's going to be warm, warm this, within the next couple of days and even maybe this weekend. So,
right.
That's what's happening. You know, I guess if you're like me, you're tripping out by this Andrew McCabe interview.
Right.
I'm sure Wayne tried to call in. I'm just now texting Wayne to let him know he can call it as well if he tried to call in the beginning and we weren't finished with the technical difficulties. But the unbelievable thing is this Andrew McCabe interview that everybody was previewing for 60 Minutes, and then you finally heard what went down in the 60 Minutes interview, and it's every time you think you're not going to be surprised, you are surprised, you know?
Well, the thing that I think is really interesting with regards to Andrew McCabe and, of course, the Mueller investigation supposedly about to release its findings sometime next week, we'll see about that, is that all along, you and I and many others who have kept up with this charade and this game, this theatrics, have been saying that Trump was guilty of treason, obstruction of justice. He has been laundering money. I mean, there are so many crimes that he has committed that it's a matter of really following the money and who got the money, but we're also discovering it's just not about Trump. It's about the entire GOP establishment. This is deep stuff. This is past Watergate.
Yeah, and I kind of think, you know, I began thinking just yesterday or the day before it started dawning on me that there's a reason that Paul Ryan retired, right? I think there's a real reason that he retired more than just him getting worn down with the process and all that. That's bull. He's retiring. He went out, Speaker of the House. He stopped. You know, maybe he finally realized that being sucked into Trump's orbit and all he had done to support that is really coming back to bite us. But there's something more to it. And I totally agree with you that there's something more to it that is can be even more far-reaching. And I think that maybe certain individual certain individuals got tired or didn't really want to go that deep in terms of supporting this guy and exposing themselves to the amount of impropriety that it's looking like they're involved in. I mean, if you look at Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell, you could see them trying to walk that tightrope and not go quite as far as someone like Devin Nunes, who really was quite obvious. And, you know, if you've been paying attention to any of these McCabe interviews, you know that Devin Nunes refused to leave the meeting of the Gang of Eight, even after he had been reprimanded for running back to the president and revealing information that he shouldn't have been, that he wouldn't leave the room, you know, and he wouldn't recuse himself for that. So that clearly tells you where these people are coming from. And I've felt that about the Republican Party, really, you know, people kind of forgot about it. And maybe it's part of a larger plan that how George Bush won his election and all of the improprieties going on in that campaign. The only thing that kind of makes people forget was Obama came in right after, how devastating George Bush was, and also George Bush's demeanor, W's demeanor. You know, Were he like Trump, we would have already been in this place that we are now. But he's not like Trump, because at least he seems to have some sort of a soul somewhere inside of him. And so he seems to be a little bit more concerned about people than an individual like Donald Trump. But certainly, I thought this, and I said it before, I don't mind saying it again, and I think the Republican Party is willing to cheat to win elections. And if we look at the last two victories of presidential of Republican presidents, there was some discrepancy within the election of their victory, let's say, their victorious election. Obviously, George W. Bush, the discrepancy came down to everything that went down in Florida, and oops, his brother just happened to be the governor of the state at the time. Bad move to me, bad chess player move to me by Al Gore to think you could rely on Florida, but, you know, that's my perspective. But now when comes along and Bush drives the economy literally into the ground, under the ground, here comes, right, let the first Democrat, first black Democrat fix everything up, and the next Republican comes in by nefarious or certainly suspicious means. So it seems as though that even if you have the few individuals, there's a lot more of those individuals there in their party that seem to be willing to cheat than obviously there seem to be in the Democratic Party. And I keep saying to people, you know, it's like the movies when you have the hero. The hero, a lot of times, you know, can resort to the same tactics to achieve his objectives as the bad guy, because then that makes him as bad as the bad guy. So that's always been a kind of a rule of years until people decided to make it a flawed good guy and make the good guy have some flaws where he turns to his dark side every once in a while to end up doing the right thing. And that's based in the character of Batman, right? Batman is a vigilante who becomes a vigilante after the murder of his parents and uses, you know, somewhat illegal means to bring about justice. So sometimes we have the Democrats don't mind being the flawed leading hero character and get down and be ready to fight with the same type of tactics that they use. Because clearly the Republican Party or certain members who are running it or making certain decisions for them have no problem with using whatever means necessary to achieve their victories. And those top percentage of people that really run the world, I guess, don't have a problem with it either, unless it affects them directly. But, you know, I'm talking a whole bunch of conspiracy-type stuff that some people don't believe in, so who am I?
Well, Eric, it's really not a conspiracy if you're a student of history. History is, right? The objectivity of history is about the facts and the truth. And anytime you want to bend those facts and the truth, then you get a distortion in history so that people become misinformed, miseducated, and end up being stuck on stupid and parked on dumb. And in point in case, what's going on right now, the Southern Strategy. How old is the Southern Strategy, Eric? You and I are old enough to recognize what that phrase really means. And right now, you're seeing it played out in all of its phases as a result of the oligarch, the money interests in this country trying to buy the democracy and pervert it to make it justice as just us only. And therefore, you're getting exactly what you get in North Carolina with the voter suppression and oppression and the cheating that went on in North Carolina to seat a GOP candidate. You got how many indictments against a sitting president right now who in his own administration, half of them have pleaded guilty or about to plead guilty and are in jail. And so you have a you have a system of corruption, and it's being exposed as to exactly what it is. This is worse than the mafia. These are people who have paid their way into buying and greasing the pockets of every one of those people in Congress, and they should be wearing jumpsuits like the folks who drive the NASCAR circuit, just to show who really is their sponsor.
Right, right. Because these sliders will have no concern whatsoever about the broader population. But let's bring in this other caller here. I don't know if this is Wayne calling or caller. Your mic is open at a 718 number. Is that you, Wayne?
Okay, yeah, it's me. I'm sorry, I got caught up in my landlord routine. I could not concur with you guys more about what's going on. But you know, the thing that really bothers me more than anything else is that we have such modern technology going on. I mean, this is not the 1950s or 60s. You know, we have the social media. We have computers that are very much in the fore. You know, a lot of the stuff that these folks got away with down south and even up south can be done away with if we were to suddenly segue to an electronic way of doing things with the voting process. I mean, I'm not saying they wouldn't figure out a way to hack, you know, what goes on,
yeah,
but
that's,
clearly...
that's what got us in the situation in the first place. I got to disagree with you to a certain point, because that's what got us in the situation in the first place, their ability to hack electronics. I'm just
exactly,
the other way. I think
with
voting,
the Russians, yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to finish this point. I think we should go back the other way and go back to paper ballots. I mean, not to say that there's not any wrongdoing that can't be done with that, but it sure is not as easy as hacking into a system and hitting a button and changing everything.
No, I agree, and I think there's probably a way around that. You know, I mean, the deal is we couldn't get folks out before, and then, you know, it's society. I still believe in the democracy. I just think that we have one party of the two large parties that just wants to see this country go down, or at least stay in lockstep with what it was 150 years ago. And you know, that day is done, man. These young people aren't sitting up for that nonsense. They saw what we went through, what struggles we... I'm not saying all are in unison with the way we feel, what we believe, but a lot of them are vocal, you know? And I see a resurgence of some of the demonstrations that, you know, we participated in back in the day. And, you know, they're not going to stand for nonsense anymore. And I think that's what this should be all about. I think it's deplorable what's going on in North Carolina, that there's no way Stacey Abrams should not have been governor. Same deal in Florida, you know. And then you got this nonsense in Virginia that just baffles me to no end. You know, do you give the guy a pass? I mean, he didn't do any political improprieties as in governance of his office, but, you know, maybe if we were aware of what he was about in his mind. And again, I'm a Christian brother. I'm a devout Catholic. I believe in forgiveness, but damn, you know, it's
well,
all
you know,
the charts.
Wayne and Eric, one of the things that's really exposing itself right now is the editor of an Alabama newspaper who has recently called for the KKK to do night riding again. Now, this is an
A Maine newspaper in Alabama?
A Maine newspaper in Alabama. And so the thing that we got to realize is this. You got this white racist supremacist calling for the KKK to rise again, the Southern strategy. So let me see if I can get this straight. Now, we got a president who's focused on MS-13, a border wall that won't keep out a taco, no collusion, Islamic boogeyman, and a nuclear threat from a little rocket man. But right here in our very own backyard, we got an ignorant white supremacist, bigot, racist, card-carrying KKK, and it stokes more fear amongst the citizens and residents of Alabama. And what do we have? The Justice Department, the GOP, and the master slaveholder living in the White House are being tolerant and complacent and with this domestic terrorist sending out and announcing terroristic threats to America. So that's where your problem exists, because we're worried about some boogeyman across the border, and yet we got this ignorant asshole in Alabama being able to post that in his newspaper without any impunity whatsoever. This is what's wrong.
Byron, the issue with that is that this reflects from the very top. This, he's getting his instructions from that White House that,
yes,
you know, basically upholds that kind of behavior. I mean, we were able to get a Democratic senator in Alabama a few months ago, which seemed to be like a neck-and-neck contest. And the deal is that I think largely people are aware of what's going on, but when you see nonsense like that, it should be called out. Like, I got no time for Bernie Sanders with what he did up there in New Hampshire or in Vermont, you know, with regard to the black state senator who was ostracized and was basically the victim of some Klan activity up there. You know, he talks about bringing the races together and wanting bring about a democracy, but where was his vocal? In his home state, where was he vocal?
Okay, what was the situation for those of us that don't know? Can you recap the situation was?
There was a black state senator who had to withdraw from her seat because there was so much racial. I can't think of the young lady's name. But the deal is that there was so much animosity towards her, towards the family, towards wanting to be progressive. You know, all the ideals that young, and I hate to use the word socialist because all of a sudden that's become a dirty word, but progressive black political figures are doing to bring about change has gone up. It was taking place in Vermont. They threatened her family at her doorstep. It got to the point where she realized giving up her seat in Vermont was far more important than, you know, sitting there and tolerating the nonsense, not knowing whether or not if her children would be impacted by her defiance, you know, up until the point where it occurred. And she had support, you know. But the bottom line is this stuff is happening throughout all of the country, and the problem is because we have somebody in office who says it's okay now. We, you know, Obama is gone, and we can act like this and express our true beliefs. And I'd like to think that decadent few is only a select decadent few, but you know, with the help of Fox Media and places like that project that kind of mindset. You know, this divisiveness is about divide and conquer. It's what Byron was saying earlier. I mean, it's a Southern strategy, but it's all over this freaking country.
Well, it's 400 years since the first landing in 1619.
Right.
You know?
It's about dividing and conquer the citizens or African Americans, because from what I heard, it was a racial thing up in New Hampshire, right? Or was it? You mentioned some about socialism. So I assume
it was
a racial.
It was Vermont.
Right.
It was in the state of Vermont. And
it pretty much didn't like her from a racial standpoint, not the fact that
you
mentioned something about her pushing. Yeah. You know, there's no consequences, you know. There's several questions I have. First is that I don't think I really have come to question these past several years whether the myth and the story and storyline that America goes by is really the real storyline, right? A democracy, a country where people come to be free and all that stuff. I'm wondering if that's just the facade, and maybe individuals who set up things to run in a way where people can get along and you have a form of government and a form of society and order and this and that. Throughout history, there's been individuals that have been administering that society, helping that society form, helping to shape that society, helping to continue it, to keep it consistent in what it's done. And that's been, you know, from the perspective of people with power, from the perspective of white people, perspective of supremacy, and those white folks, white men with money and power, and to really control everything. And that's, as the country developed, you know, this small elite group of people always exerted their influence. And so I don't know whether this country and everything else was built around kind of the myths and those kind of public statement pillars of what America is supposed to be. But if we look at the history of America, it's never acted like what it said it was. You know, it never really acted like, you know, give them your poor, your huddled masses, or home with a free, all that stuff. It's never really acted like the literal sense of those words. And when it has, we've had to use only half of the words, like the Star Spangled Banner that we wanted to sing by. As time went on, we had to cut out that last verse that referenced a slave and hoping the slave get caught, because it was okay for them to do it back when they first started singing it, right? And they all sang that with impunity and, you know, had, like, you know, picnics and lynchings and hangings that they would go through, like they were entertainment to see people get hung and brutalized and destroyed. And as time went on, they cut out that verse. You know, but that tells me that it was never really intended to do the things that people claim that it, or that the PR statement is out about now about America. I don't know whether it was really intended to be a free country. Maybe it was always their intention was to make it a country where people would rule over a certain segment of the population. Certainly, if you look at their goals all over the world, it does seem, you do see a pattern develop of supremacy by one particular group over other groups, you know, regardless of what continent you're on. So I don't know if, you know, all of those nice flowery things we like to think about this country and about the intentions of people who claim they have the best intentions is really true. I can only go by what I see their actions to be.
Well, as a son of immigrants and understanding, you know, from the dynamic what it looks like from the outside looking in, I think the intentions were clear that this was supposed to be set up in such a way as the Statue of Liberty sits in our harbor and says, bring us our poor, bring us the tired, and all that. But the bottom line is that there has been a ruling class quietly running, you know, underneath here, and it's not even quiet. I mean, it's just very apparent. But the bottom line is, I still think that in the long run of all the systems, this one is the one that everybody wants to come to. My ancestors came here to get away. I can only imagine. I sit down with friends from the Caribbean who I associate with who understood what it was like to come here in the 40s and 50s and try to make it away for yourself. God forbid if we had stayed behind and see, you know, the kind of, I'm not saying that there weren't advancements in those areas, but you can't juxtapose what goes on here with what goes on down there with third world politics. You know, it's just one of those things. We just got to make this system work. And I don't mean to take up, but I just wanted to point out, I just got the young lady's name, Vermont State Senator, State Representative Kia Morris, resigned from office citing extensive racial harassment and telling the New York Times that the lack of response from local law enforcement has been stunning. Morris, who was the only black woman in the state legislature, announced in August that she wouldn't run for re-election. She wrote that the political discourse had become divisive, inflammatory, and at times even dangerous. You know, it's that kind of nonsense that's supposed to be in a liberal, progressive state, you know, there's silence so deafening that it's despicable.
But it's not new. That's what I'm saying. You said you came from and United States, when you look at it, it's kind of one of the better systems throughout the world, without a doubt. People coming from other countries, but and islands and things like that. But even on those places that you sought to leave, that people came to this country to make a better way of life, leaving those places behind. I would venture to say, certainly, if you talk about any of the islands or the continent of Africa, that there, all over the face of the globe, there has been the influence of one group of people over another group of people, and has also been a negative influence. Even, you know, some of the islands that used to be colonies of the European nations, what they've done in Africa. So
to say, you know, it's much better here than it was over there. And the thing, yeah, it is. And the system that's been set up here has been one that thrives for people. Let's make it so everybody gets a little something so everybody doesn't really trip out. That's what you say at the top, right? We're going to make it
right.
So everybody gets a little something. So give them just enough not to get have them notice how badly we're doing it, how much money we're making. So, you know, I don't know whether, you know, I don't think that was really the intent to welcome other people from the world with the little statue or the giant statue that France gave to the United States. Who knows whether that, maybe we bought it and said, hey, that'll be nice to put in the harbor. Yeah, that fills our narrative, you know, and that's what we want people to believe. But, you know, the other activities that have been, that the United States has engaged in, clearly suggests that, you know, you haven't always walked it the way you talked it. Right.
Yeah, and you're right. It's universal. That's why, you know, sometimes I get into arguments with my Caribbean brothers about versus the Black American experience. It's two different experiences altogether. You can't turn around and think that you're any better because they got independence on an island and come here and see what subtle degradation and racism still exists, you know, that's gone on for 400 years. You know, you can't come here with this arrogance and thinking that you're better than, you know, because at the end of the day, we're all one color. They, you know,
you're talking about people coming from the islands and thinking they're better than Black people here.
Yeah,
is that,
I mean, that's been going
about?
On. I'm not. I'm going to call it what it is. You know, I've seen this
go on
time
from
and again.
Go ahead.
But the bottom line is that there is that notion out there amongst not all of us but some of us that, you know, the deal is, oh, these you know, I'm not going to go and use a pejorative, but the bottom line is that there's some that will turn around and reference African Americans being one way and saying that they're shiftless and lazy. We come here, take advantage of every opportunity. And yes, we might have excelled in some areas, but that does not mean that the institutionalism of racism that's gone on for 400 years have not had an impact, like what Byron was saying earlier. You know, it has still an impact on what goes on today. It affects my psyche. It affects yours. It affects your cousin who's sitting in a congressional seat. It's something that we, you know, we can't escape from. You know, I mean, no matter how bright we are, we're still facing this monkey. And I'm reminded of something. My dad died 5 years ago, 94 years of age. On his deathbed, he was still talking about an incident that bothered him from the time he was a child. His father was white. He came to this country in 1949, 1950. He stayed at the Hotel Teresa at the corner of 125th Street and 7th Avenue in Harlem. He was walking with his seven sons, his own biological sons. A cop, white cop, stops him, arrests him because there was this ignorance that these weren't his children. And they locked him up, and he had to spend overnight in jail. And he was so angered by that experience that he left this country and went back to the islands where that kind of nonsense wasn't going on. So I'm just saying, you know, and we're talking 49, 50, the Jim Crow era, that nonsense still, you know, my dad used to talk about it all the time. I didn't understand the significance of it, but as time went on, as I got older and started seeing what was going on, and particularly with my involvement in news, you know, it was one of my motivations. You know, I mean, this, we have to call it like it is. It's got to be out there. It's a sickness, and it's got to end sometime.
It's the DNA of this country, and it is a sickness.
It is.
And part of it is relative to the issue of race and money. And this nation, in its escape from the British Empire, was indeed set up, you know, we just celebrated President's Day on Monday. And in that, we celebrated a slave owner. We celebrated the construct of right now, 2019, the White House sitting in Washington, D.C., is the nation's biggest plantation. You got to realize the optics are sometimes overweighing the concept of altruism, because it's dealing with a reality that you still have a city, which you call your nation's capital, and you got a White House who is built by slaves, and the only time the slaves came and took the house over was with Barack Hussein Obama. And out of that, now you have a president who is the 45th president who has taken over and has restored, very much like what Andrew Johnson wanted to do in the South during Reconstruction, and has restored the perversion. Think about it, guys. You got a gangster leader in the White House. His wife is formerly a call girl, a new call girl, and who comes to this country illegally. Now, you can't get much more of a storyline that reverts back to the concept of the perversion that is the DNA of America.
Yeah. I mean, it was designed to be exactly how he's running it now. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I don't the whole democracy and the whole facade that America has, the PR image that America has, is not who America is. And I think that what I was saying, that globally, that they have this. That they have done it, that there's a certain segment of Europeans, white people that think in terms of ruling the darker people. You know, that I forget what treaty it was in the 1800s, when the European nations got together to carve up Africa to decide how they wanted to colonize Africa. So it's not it's something perfected on us here in America, but it's a global kind of notion that members of that ethnic group have, and it's been going on. And the reason that we have 400 years of it in America is because it's something that they were engaging in all over the world, it seems like, you know. So
and Eric, conference that you were referencing happened in 1884-85. It's called the Berlin Conference, in which they carved up Africa.
Right.
That's how it went down, just like that.
1885 was some 200 years after slaves came to the United States, were brought to the United States. So this was a philosophy that had by them. I mean, you know, anytime you have here in America a guy like Willie Lynch who perfects from their perspective the breaking of slaves and the whole notion and the institution of slavery, and break it down to a science that the man did, and to see how it was done, and to see the practice of buck breaking, you know, that practice now that, you know, just really through the internet came to my attention, the buck breaking practice of some homosexual slave masters, what they would do to break the more militant slaves or ones who refused to do that. So, you know, it's something that's been going on, and we have towns named after Lynchburg, Virginia. You know, Willie Lynch. So, I say all this to say, if there are no repercussions, right? If there's no punishment, then they're gonna keep. That's what they keep doing. And this society is such that people get comfortable enough to say, well, it's gonna be okay now. It's okay. Let's work at it. You know, you only decide to change when you're forced to change, right? So I was thinking about how they'd like to describe away politics, right? They're just politicians, and here go the politicians. You know, politics, if I'm not mistaken, I was trying to look up the definition, but I think both you guys probably can at least paraphrase the definition with me. Is politics is the art of the negotiation, right? It's how we work the compromise to work together, right? And when we politic, we sit down and we negotiate. So,
like the title of Orange Man's book, but you're right.
But that's kind of what politics is, right?
Yeah,
how people come
it is. It is.
So, and in that reflects your priorities, what you're trying to negotiate, what you're trying to advocate for when you are compromising with other individuals, right? And it's the art, the politics is the art of how we sit down and negotiate. And so,
to
but that does reflect
power, though. It's one
sorry,
thing, Larry. You're right. It's to negotiate, but it's to a politics is basically to who to determine who and how you're going to achieve power. Remember that. It's not just it's not just the balance of intellectual balances and superiority, but it's who's going to be in control over the government of a country or an area. It's all about power.
Okay, so that changes then my whole notion of, or it kind of supports a little bit, your politics indicates what your priorities are, right? If it is all
yes.
about that power, right? So
yes.
your politics indicates your priorities, meaning that indicates what's important to you, meaning that the things that are important to you and your constituents and the people you represent, you're going to push for and try to gain power to achieve those, right? So
exactly.
if immigration ain't one of your priorities, is making sure that kids don't get ripped away from their parents or making sure that those inner city kids have a decent education ain't one of your priorities, then you ain't going to do it, right? So when people try to explain, well, the politicians get together, what, no, that's indicating what they find important. So the fact that some of them don't find it important enough to look into and investigate the murders of black men by law enforcement, those who are supposed to be protecting all of us, shows that their priorities are not for the murders of black men. So, I mean, just I wanted to work to dispel this whole notion where people say, oh, that's just politics. I don't pay attention to politics. Politics, to me, has always meant the life and death struggles of the ethnic group from which I come. It's never been about just about politics. It's been about freedom. It's been about equality. It's been about education. So it always kind of angers me, you know, when people talk about politics, yeah, you become a politician and a public servant, but it's not just, it's not a far-fetched thing. It's not a lofty idea in the sky because, you know, we come from an ethnic group where the politics was life and death, where you stood
exactly.
politically, what your priorities are, is life and death to us, you know? So our, when they want to say our politics is black nationalism or whatever they want to say our politics is Black Lives Matters, yeah. That's our politics. And for them to try and what they do all the time is bastardize and take the very thing that we say and turn it around and twist it is an indication of someone whose priorities aren't pro-you. They don't care about us. And they
exactly.
never did. So when they talk about politics, they try to just explain it about politics, that's bullshit to me. Excuse my language.
Yeah.
No, I hear what you're saying, but the thing is that how do we convince these people? Where can there be a balance of power? Where is it there? I mean, when
that's the problem.
Where can
when
we bring
about
up
trying
an
to
understanding?
Convince somebody, you're trying to talk about trying
well,
to convince somebody that there should be a balance of power. That's the problem. Power doesn't concede power.
No,
never will. It still is something that you have your hand out. Let me try to convince you. I'm not going to convince you of nothing, man, because you know that I have this gun at my side, this six-shooter at my head. You got one at yours. So you convince yourself,
right.
you know? But unfortunately, we are in a position in this country, Wayne, where we do have to convince, we do have to get a coalition of people up with us because we as a people are not in, A, the numbers, and, B, we are not in the power positions. We're not in the positions to control the police force like many of them do, come out and join
exactly.
the police force. Because they want to get all the guns. Because they know if it finally comes down to something, at least we got the guns. Let's go get them and hand them out to everybody. Or let's go get this Bearcat or this surplus of Army issue tanks and things that we're going to use to turn on this population in our country should they get out of line and decide they want more than we're willing to give them. So, you know, if they ain't got no consequences for their actions, they're always going to be acting the same way.
So Eric... And Wayne, check this out. Based on your philosophy and theory there, the fact that the sitting 45 who wants to take money out of the Defense Department to build a ridiculous wall, like I said, that wouldn't keep out a taco, you know, ultimately comes back to the point that the $5 billion that he's trying to squirrel away from all the other programs, especially from the Defense Department, means that they didn't need it in the first place. and that's $5 billion that could have gone into social services, into feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, sheltering the homeless, healing the sick, and giving hope to the hopeless. So all they're interested in, when you create power and money and put those two things together, nothing else matters to the person or people in charge. That's it.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
but we
right.
still have a system of checks and balances here. And, I mean, the deal is for him to go call a news conference the other day and say that it was no longer a priority. And we went through a whole month of a government shutdown that impacted even people in his own support group. You know, to me, he should have been impeached just predicated on his words there. I mean, it's just despicable.
Now, impeachment by way of the Constitution has to be crimes of war, in crimes of war.
No, I
now,
understand what you're saying, Byron, but
however, we are at war. Did not Congress and the Justice Department and the intelligence agencies say that cyber attack on our elections was an act of war?
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And then what?
It's been
and
declared.
And then they also said. Let me add on to that, or I guess you're getting ready to put on to that, is that they indicated that we're in a cyber war with Russia, right? And then upon presenting this information to the president, as per the words of the former acting FBI chief, that he seemed as his reaction was that, I don't believe you. I believe Putin. And that's when they began to say his actions didn't match up with someone who's supposed to be protecting their country. His actions
that
lined up with someone who had a different
treason.
Objective.
That's
he
called
treason. It's called
that's
what?
That's what it is. Treason.
Scary.
That's an act
Thank
of
you very
treason.
Much. Abating,
and the fact
was
that
aiding,
the,
aiding
and
abetting?
Abetting that's right.
Yeah.
A foreign government to overthrow our government. That's what's been going on. Now, the only thing we do have, gentlemen, that is our saving grace, and believe me, is walking a thin line right now, and that is the justice system. But you and I already have a problem with the justice system because it's been used against us so many times to destroy our act and right to freedom and to equality in this country. Now, believe it or not, and I'm a spiritual person, as you may know, and you just said you're a good Catholic. So, Wayne, I want you to go to your Bible right now and open up the first four chapters of Exodus and tell me that we're not in that part of that book right now.
Well, I regrettably don't have the Bible in front of me, but I certainly will look into that.
You look at it, you're going to be like, oh, my God. And we are Judeo-Christian ethic practicing people. And whether we want to believe it or not, as much as we acknowledge Islam, and when you look up those first four chapters, look up the definition of a Semite, and you're going to see Palestinians, Arabs, Ethiopians, and okay, so now let's focus on the concept of what did go on when the slaves, the God's chosen people, tried to escape Pharaoh. I'm telling you, it's already written, and we follow that almost like it's the only script ever written, and they'll say it in their movies.
Well, there it is.
White people will tell you everything they're doing in their movies. Guaranteed. Look at it.
We're going to have to leave it right there because we have a minute to go. And we'll have to leave it right there and pick up on the other side when we talk again about whether the Bible is actually the end-all, be-all of that notion, because we know that if we listen to Dr. Ben, he'll tell you something else. But we got 60 seconds. So why don't you give your sign off there, Brother Byron Saunders?
Yes, sir. Peace and love always, and be good to your black self. This is Black History Month, y'all. I love being black.
Black to the future. All right,
That's
Brother
it.
Byron. Thank you, sir. Black to the future. I'll get black to you.
Yeah,
I got a million of them. All right. Wayne.
I can't top that, Eric. I mean, that to me is it right there. But, you know, I just hope there's a system of justice in Chicago. I've been paying attention to this case, and, you know, I know we should have gotten into that tonight. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Everybody, thanks for listening to the Kay Thompson Live Show. That was Brother Wayne Gilman. The Kay Thompson Live Show comes out every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Or if you miss it on a Wednesday, it's archived. I'm Citizen Payne. Gotta go. See you later next week. Bye-bye.